by calling 305-285-2923 or online at cyberknifemercy.org. Support for NPR Newscast comes from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at WTGrantFoundation.org.
And we return 7 minutes past 1 o'clock. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. Well, today we're again in our at-your-service mode. We'll talk about hiring a contractor to either build a home, make renovations, or repairs. My guest, you might expect a burly man to be with me today, but that isn't the case. It's Kia Ritchie, also known as the Contractress. She's an Orlando-based contractor who's even written a book called Avoiding the Con in Construction. Nice to see you, Kia.
Well, thank you.
Where did you get the experience to be a contractor?
Funny enough, I began my working career as a Disney artist. But while I was out there at Disney, I worked on some monumental projects, including the Tree of Life. And that stimulated an interest in structural integrity. Hmm. And I went on to get my contractor's license 12 years ago when the industry was really taking off. I began building residential homes and quickly went into the commercial industry and built several restaurants. I've built some offices for attorneys and chiropractors, and I've even done some projects for the state of Florida.
So you've been around the bases.
I have.
What's the biggest con in construction, or are there many?
Well, there are many, but, you know, I'd like to point out that there are many qualified and competent contractors, and the key is finding the tools and using the tools to find out which contractors are qualified and a good fit for your project.
Now, with the economy so tight, a lot of people want to save money, and I'm sure they wouldn't do it to build a new home, but maybe for repairs. They might want to go on Craigslist and save the money, but they're kind of playing Russian roulette there.
They are. Your listeners need to know that the state uses licensing and insurance as a means to regulate professionals. In regard to professional licensing, the state determines which professionals to regulate, and it can be realtors, CPAs, architects, contractors, beauticians, etc. And then the state goes on to determine which tradespeople in these various professions require professional licensing, not to be confused with an occupational license. So in construction, electricians, mechanical contractors, plumbers, roofers, general contractors, swimming pool contractors are all licensed in addition to several other tradespeople. So in order for a homeowner to determine whether a contractor requires licensing, it's a two-step process. And this information is readily available at the State of Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation website. Now, the two steps are, first, determine, does this contractor require a professional license? Because a painting contractor wouldn't be regulated at state level. And then second, is the contractor compliant with the state's regulations? And again, you simply use a search engine like Google and type in the words State of Florida Contractor Licensing. And the state has done a tremendous job of putting information online, and you'll immediately see a tab titled Verify a License. And you enter into this web page, and not only will you see a drop-down menu that shows the various tradespeople requiring a professional license, but also a line that you enter in the contractor's name to see if the license is active.
Hmm. Interesting information. Tell me, there's a lot of deregulating going on in Tallahassee with the new governor administration. Is there anything on the horizon of deregulating or making it less regulated in the construction industry and contractors?
I haven't heard anything. But I think it's important that contractors are regulated because there are certain professions that can cause harm. Consider an electrician that improperly wires a home. Not only does that cause harm to the homeowner, but it can also injure the adjacent neighbor, or an entire subdivision can burn to the ground. So certain professionals do need to be regulated. And mind you, this isn't just a registration process that the contractor undertakes, simply submitting a document that shows they're incorporated or that their occupational license is in place. Contractors undertake extensive testing. It's a two-day, 10-hour test. And then, in addition, they have to demonstrate that they have experience, several years' worth of experience, that they have a history of that's free of crimes, and also that they have the finances in place to be a legitimate contractor and work as a professional.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in with a comment or question, you're certainly welcome. We have an expert in the studio. That number is 1-800-743-WLRN, 1-800-743-9576, and also email is open. That's radio@WLRN.org. If you choose to email, please don't make those two involved. Tell me, Kia Ritchie, about the contractor is sort of in the catbird seat, in that a homeowner probably has never done a renovation or something like that, while a contractor has done many. So what should the homeowner do to make sure that they're getting a fair shake?
I can't overemphasize the importance of a clear scope of work. And the scope of work are all the documents that describe the work. They can be blueprints, or they could simply be written specifications. If you are, for example, doing a replacing a water heater or simply replacing the shingles on your roof, everything needs to be very accurately described to the make, model, and finish so that the contractor can accurately bid the work. That's step number one. Then secondly, you want to get a qualified contractor. And earlier on, I was talking about licensing. You want to do all this research before you reach out to the contractor, because why would you spend time inviting a person into your home and describing the project if this person isn't qualified to do the work? So I always advise homeowners, do your research first, including researching whether or not the contractor has insurance in place.
How about local building departments? Is the homeowner required to be in contact with them, or should that just be the general contractor?
Joseph, that's an excellent question. I advise homeowners to reach out to the building department well in advance of even paying for blueprints, because the building department comprises professionals that can answer questions not only about where you can do the work. If you were building an addition, for example, you don't want it to encroach onto an easement, but also who can do the work. So they'll advise you whether or not you need a licensed professional on the job, whether or not you need a permit on the job, etc. So reach out to them well in advance and bring as many documents as you have available, including any surveys you've had done in the past.
I know the building departments and permit departments can't recommend contractors. That would be a conflict of interest. But perhaps if you kind of made friends there, you might get a subtle steer away from somebody who might be bad news and has flunked a lot of inspections or something. Is that possible?
Yeah, perhaps. But
to use
like
your people
you said,
skills and
yeah, you might get a little wink
a little
or
bit.
A thumbs down. But really, there's so much information on the website now that a homeowner has the tools to do the research. In regard to insurance, for example, homeowners need to know that insurance is a safety net for them if an injury occurs on their property. Workers' comp, for example. If you hire a roofer and this roofer is injured on your property, if workers' comp is in place, the injured roofer can use the funds in the workers' compensation fund to pay for the injury. So if there's not insurance in place, this person may go after his or her employer, the roofing company, or the general contractor, and perhaps even the owner. So you want to make sure workers' comp is in place. And again, this is available on the internet. Use search terms such as State of Florida Workers' Compensation Database. And again, you'll come to the page where you can enter in the contractor's name and ensure that there is a policy in place.
I know a lot of the access here in South Florida for roofs is to pressure clean them. Mm-hmm. Should you check out anyone who's going to be on your roof, that they have insurance?
Anybody that's going to be on your property at all should be looked over to make sure insurance is in place. And earlier we were talking about other means to verify whether a contractor is qualified. Why not have a look at clerk of court records? As you know, we have some of the most liberal sunshine laws. There is an abundance of information on the internet now. And the clerk of court is a great way to look at civil and records and criminal records, and obviously steer clear of someone that's, you know, showing a record of breach of contract, manslaughter, DUI, what have you.
We're speaking with Kia Ritchie, and we're talking about her book, Avoiding the Con in Construction. Kia, how about a website for people who want to learn more about you and the book?
My website is thecontractress.com, which is spelled the contract, RESS.com. And there's a lot of free articles and information on my website.
Let's take a short break on our program and be back with more.
Good afternoon. It's Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN. The New World Symphony, America's Orchestral Academy, presents a live concert wallcast on Saturday, April 9th at 7:30 p.m. Wallcasts are free at Miami Beach Soundscape, 305-673-3331. City Year Miami unites a diverse group of 17 to 24-year-olds for a year of service as tutors, mentors, and role models who make a difference to students and schools. You can learn more online at cityyear.org. City Year, give a year, change the world. New World School of the Arts College Opera Theater Ensemble presents two hilarious comic operas about relationships and deceit, Donizetti's Rita and Captain Lovelock by John Duke. Directed by Elena Maria Garcia, two fully staged short operas accompanied by the NWSA Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Alfred Gershfeld, April 8th and 9th at 7:30 p.m. at the Gussman Center for the Performing Arts. Information at nwsa.mdc.edu or 305-237-7855.
Friday on the Florida Roundup, state leaders reach the midway point of session as the governor's unpopularity soars. A member of the South Florida congressional delegation in Washington is tapped to become the nation's top Democrat. And it's been 50 years since the Kennedy administration launched a military operation on Cuba that changed the world and perhaps most notably South Florida. I'm Phil Latzman. Join me for those discussions and more with a panel of journalists and your input. The Florida Roundup, Friday at noon on WLRN.
From writing workshops to information on publishing and manuscript consultations with literary agents, the Writers Institute at the Florida Center for the Literary Arts is a conference for serious writers, from beginners to advanced. Facilitators include Elizabeth Alexander, Madison Smart Bell, John Dufresne, Linda Barry, and Betsy Lerner. The conference takes place May 4th through the 7th in Miami. Details at flcenterlitarts.com and at 305-237-3023.
And we return. It's 1:20 on WLRN's Topical Currents program. We're visiting with contractor Kia Ritchie. We're talking about her book, Avoiding the Con in Construction. Let's take a call or two. I've got Carlos in Pembroke Pines. Hi, Carlos.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I don't really agree about the license. It's like a guy that has a driver's license, that doesn't mean that he can drive. I think the most important thing is to check other work that this contractor has done and then verify if he has a license. But I think it's a mistake that you go to a website and just because the guy has a license, it doesn't mean much.
Well, you could do both.
It could not mean.
You could do both.
I understand. But based on whether the guy has a license or not, it doesn't really mean whether he has experience or he doesn't. All it means is that he can test and pass the test. That's all he means.
Kia?
Well, I do disagree because I had to demonstrate that I did have experience, and they went and verified it with the contractors that I had done work for. And I disagree for reasons I mentioned earlier. It's an extensive test, but there's, again, references are important, and you did touch on that, Carlos. And every homeowner should ask for a list of references, and then once they have that in hand, they also need to ask the people, did the contractor meet the budget that was initially proposed? Did the contractor meet the schedule that was initially proposed, and so forth? But I think licensing is very important, as is insurance.
How about using local talent? A lot of the community newspapers will have small contractors give ads. They'll usually put their license number and that they're a member of the community. Mm-hmm. Is that a step up, that you're starting with somebody who is going to be there for you and is a member of the community and may have references that are close by?
Well, that's a very good question, Joseph. And indeed, it should be a consideration because, for example, Miami has stricter building codes in place than we do in Central Florida because you have higher wind loading due to being on the coastline. So a contractor that does work here in the Miami area would be aware of this. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, it would be on the prints that the architect drafted as far as the fastener types, the number of fasteners, etc. But I do think there's something to working with a professional locally, but it's just one of many puzzle pieces that you have to look at.
Now, you have a contractor checklist in the book that you can kind of use as a notebook. Tell us about that.
Well, there are several steps. Again, licensing insurance is so easy to verify on state websites. Then you want to also look at referrals. We discussed that. And how about professional affiliations? Does the contractor belong to the Home Builders Association and other notable organizations? And then again, use the clerk of court records to see how this contractor has performed in his or her personal life.
And let's take another call. I've got Mary in Miami. Thanks for your patience. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for the call, the opportunity. We have been building a home now for a year and a half, and we did our research looking at the contractor, his license. The problem was that we hired a contractor who used a licensed qualifier, and we really didn't know more than, you know, doing the research on the actual licensed contractor. Never met him, only dealt with the contract company that said they had this qualifier. Long story short, we are out $51,500. They only did about $10,000 worth of work and have had to go through the process of filing a complaint with the state and the local county, which, by the way, with all these cuts, one of the departments that the local county, Dade County offices have had to cut are the investigators that particularly investigate these types of people that are illegal. We didn't know that once we hire a contractor using a qualifier, they had to be certified to do construction as well. And this particular entity did not have the certification. So we found out a little too late, even though we did our research on the state site.
Okay, let her comment.
I'll take your comments offline.
Mm-hmm. Mary, first of all, I'm really sorry to hear that. And it's unfortunate because these types of contractors give our industry a bad name, and it's unfortunate. That was a great statement, though, that you made, and it gives me an opportunity to bring up some tips about good contracting practices. To begin with, you want to make sure that there is continuity or consistency in all the contracting documents. That means that the insurance, the license, the contract, and the checks need to all be written out to one business entity, and I stress business entity because professionals now have created a corporation that they're working under for the most part. Also, another red flag is an unreasonably low bid. I am wary when a subcontractor hands me an unreasonably low bid, because it either indicates that they're missing something in the estimate, or they're trying to intentionally get the job and then use change orders to bring the price up to where it should be. Also, another red flag is when a contractor asks a homeowner to either pull a permit or tells the homeowner that a permit is not necessary. To begin with, if they say it's not necessary, check this out with the building department. And in regard to pulling a permit for a contractor,
sometimes they say you can save money if you pull the permit.
But did you know you're assuming the liabilities and the responsibilities for the job? And now the building department has gotten very savvy. They have owner builders sign a document now that clearly states their responsibilities, that they need to be aware and enforce OSHA regulations, workers' comp, that they need to also manage the job site. So they've essentially stepped into the shoes of the general contractor, and it's something that they should really consider. But then again, if you've hired a licensed contractor, don't you think it's their job to pull the permit?
Say I get my contractor, we're happy with the plans, the contractor pulls the permits and does the job, and then it fails inspection.
That does occur. But sometimes it's as simple as they forgot to put a nail in one of the hurricane straps. So contractors do fail inspections, but as long as they remedy the problem quickly and move forward with your job, I don't see a problem with
that.
What
if they start digging their heels in and you're not getting your permit approved? Do you have to go do some conflict resolution there? Or?
Yes, indeed.
And hopefully, always, I guess you don't want to take them to court.
Yeah. I always advise first trying to resolve problems with a discussion. Obviously, because litigating, arbitrating, and, you know, mediation, this all costs money. So try to have a conversation. But, you know, if you've done all your homework up front in regard to doing the research we've talked about earlier, you should have on board a good contractor. And don't forget to include the schedule in the contract that you signed with this contractor. In the past, when times were really flourishing and the contractors were thriving with lots of jobs, some of them got spread a little thin, so they wouldn't do your project in a timely manner. Well, if you incorporate the schedule into your contract, well, then they're bound to the terms of the contract. So I advise people to read the chapter on contracts and incorporate.
And what about payment schedule? What's the percentage of down payment, and when should 50% be reached and then 100% upon completion?
Unfortunately, Joseph, it's hard to say because every project is different, and I'll quickly give you an example. An air conditioning contractor that comes to replace your unit that is broken, his cost for the unit could be as much as 50% of the job, perhaps even 60%. So for the contractor to ask for a large deposit to cover that payment on the materials is acceptable, but a contractor that's perhaps building an addition and really only has mobilization costs and also some permitting costs, that would not be 50%. So what you want to do is always try to make several small payments to the contractor so that neither party is owed work or money. And again, put this into the contract. And remember, you always have the internet to research costs. Ask the contractor to justify the bill that he or she's giving you and break out what they're charging you for, and then do your research to see if it is indeed sound.
Do sometimes, rather than the building department, do HOAs and condo boards figure in here?
Yes, the homeowner needs to be aware of any conditions, covenants, and restrictions that CCRs that would be on their or that would affect their project. So indeed, it is a consideration.
Well, I certainly want to thank you, Kia Ritchie. She's an Orlando-based contractor, and she's written the book Avoiding the Con in Construction, and her website is The Contractress. That's contract with R-E-S-S on the end of it. .com, all one word. Thank you very much, Kia. It was very informative.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Also, my apologies to those callers. We couldn't get on the air. We'll be back with more.
It's Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, 91.5 WKWM. If you have questions about 91.5 WKWM NPR for the Florida Keys, please call this toll-free number, 1-866-740-9596. That's 1-866-740-WKWM. And thank you for listening. We're funded by listeners like you and by Zen Zen Salon, Aventura's organic hair salon, where beauty and fashion come together naturally. Zen Zen says, what goes into your hair is just as important as what goes into your food. Details at 305-936-9369. That's 305-ZEN-ZEN-9.
From the award-winning creative team at the House Theater of Chicago, the Adrian Arts Center presents The Sparrow from April 7th through May 1st. NPR's Ira Glass calls it moving in an unexpected way that makes you want to fight evil. A small town struggles to accept a strange girl who reminds them of loss as the girl struggles to hide the special powers that make her different. The New York Times calls it page-turning storytelling. Among the very best original theater pieces I have ever seen, raves the Chicago Tribune. The Sparrow. Information at artscenter.org.
O Miami Poetry Festival has one simple goal, that every person in Miami-Dade County encounters a poem during the month of April. Events are being held in different venues, weaving poetry into the fabric of the city, mixing traditional readings with dance, music, and art. O Miami culminates on April 30th with a reading by United States Poet Laureate W.S. Merwin at the New World Center. Tickets at omiami.org. That's omiami.org.
And we return 33 minutes past 1 o'clock. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you on this Thursday afternoon. Well, of course, that means it's Food and Dining Day, and the star of our program is here in the studio as usual, producer, chef, author, syndicated columnist, my good friend Linda Gassenheimer, also known in these parts as the Lunch Goddess. And Linda, we have some sweet tooth stimulation here in the studio today.
This is my happy day.
And, of course, dinner in minutes.
Of course.
With asparagus and potatoes.
Joe, in addition to being lucky with the sweets in the studio, we're just lucky here in South Florida because if you like wine and food, this is the place to be. Just after we've had the South, remember we had the South Beach Wine and Food Festival, and now United Way Miami is having their Wine and Food Festival, and it starts next week on April 14th. Lynn Farmer is the director of the festival, and he's here to tell us all about it and maybe about some new wine trends. Welcome, Lynn Farmer.
Well, thank you, Linda, and Joe, it's good to be with you guys.
Nice to have you here again.
It's good to be back, and with my friend Fred Tasker, too.
Yes, right. We need to mention Fred.
All of us together.
Yeah, we're getting ready to have a real conversation here about wine.
You two enophiles, right, yeah.
All right, there's a chef here. Let's say hello to the food side of this.
Two chefs.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Cordon bleu.
People can't see this. This is not television. But on one side of the studio, we have all these wine people. But on my side of the studio, we have the food people. And Orlando Arroyo is one of the chefs at Seasons 52 in Coral Gables. He's going to be participating in the festival. He's here to tell us all about the new food trends. And he's a major pastry chef.
And he's the younger generation of chefs.
Welcome, Chef Orlando Arroyo.
Thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here with you guys and share my talents of what we do at Seasons 52.
Okay, that's wonderful. And as we've already mentioned, sitting in his usual seat with his usual smile is Fred Tasker. We all know he's the wine columnist for the Miami Herald, and he writes the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column that you can read in today's Miami Herald. And you can read it at dinnerinminutes.com. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, today we're going to talk about the prowess of America in drinking wine. Going to make you proud.
All right. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any questions for our wine and our food experts? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN.
And email, that's radio@WLRN.org. Sorry for stepping on you.
Oh, that's quite all right. Lynn Farmer.
Congratulations on the festival. I think this is your 16th year.
This will be our 16th annual, and it's been a great run in the first 15 years. We've netted more than $12 million for
that
South Florida Charities.
Amazing that you've netted that much, because a lot of festivals spend a lot of money, you know, putting the festival on. It does. It takes a lot of effort to do that.
It does, and we also put a lot of effort into it, but we have a fabulous team at United Way of Miami-Dade, and we're able to make a lot of the money that we make through the auction and ticket sales and all of that goes right back into the South Florida community. So we're very proud of that.
That's, well, you should be. I think that's terrific. So tell us, where is the festival going to be?
Well, the festival is in many ways all over. The Thursday night, April 14th, we open with a grand tasting at Merrick Park, which
is a week
from
today.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful venue to be able to walk around outdoors while you're sipping your wine and tasting from restaurants like Seasons 52. And it's such a treat to be here with Chef to talk about some of the things he's going to bring, because he's representing one of 30 restaurants that will be at this tasting and about 65 wineries and importers. And then Friday night, we have what's called an interactive dinner at the Intercontinental Miami. Dewey Losado, a longtime friend of yours and mine,
right,
and now executive chef at The Forge, is mm-hmm. going to be on stage cooking. And at every table, we have tables of eight, and at every table in the room, there will be a cook station, and we all get to pretend we're Orlando and cook along with the chef up on the stage. And that's a lot of fun. And in addition, this year's interactive dinner, it's sponsored by Bacardi. So they're lending us one of their top mixologists.
We're
going to have interactive cocktails too, Joe.
That should make very interesting dinners.
We're going to learn how to make
drinks. Interesting chefs.
We'll do the same thing. At the table, you're making your own. You know, it's like,
yeah, right.
We don't give them any sharp knives after that, of course. But
I understand that those interactive dinners can get pretty entertaining when you have the amateurs out there trying to cook something.
Fortunately, you're right, but fortunately we have 40 students from Johnson & Wales University who come in and act as sous chefs, so they're on the floor also helping everybody figure out which end of the whisk to hold.
Right. I bet Lynn knows his way around the kitchen pretty well.
And so,
he does.
I know my way around the mop.
He's a renaissance man.
Lynn, this goes on for the whole weekend?
It does. Saturday, there's a wonderful dinner called the Celebration, and you know, earlier in January, we had this thing called a Best in Glass Wine Challenge. It was a blind wine competition judged only by sommeliers here in South Florida. And they chose wines with different medals. And so all the gold medal wines they chose, they've been featuring for a month at the various restaurants.
So then there's going to be this dinner on Saturday night. And then
on Sunday,
this is open to the public who want to participate.
Absolutely.
On Sunday, there's a beer. Thanks.
Yes, it's a new event for us to add a fourth day. So it's a brew and bites. So it's a beer tasting, like the wine tasting on Thursday is mirrored by the beer tasting on Sunday.
Okay, well, let's go to Chef Orlando, who's sitting here. He's got a wonderful smile. I'm sorry everyone can't see this great smile.
He has wonderful desserts, too, and I'm sorry you can't. Well, I'm glad you can't see what we've done to them.
That's why I am smiling. Seasons 52 has several locations in South Florida. They're in Palm Beach, Boca Raton, Fort Lauderdale, and now Coral Gables. And you know, Chef, what I find amazing in this very tough restaurant market where so many restaurants close, you recently opened in Coral Gables and it's a major success. So what's your secret to success?
Well, I think one of the things that we offer at Seasons 52 and we bring to Coral Gables is the fact that we change our menu 4 times a year with the seasons. So we always have the freshest ingredients available for that particular season. And not only that, but we are healthier choice, you know, everything being under 470
calories.
People
can't believe, as you see these beautiful plates full of food, and no plate there has more than 475 calories.
No, correct? I think all that comes into how we prepare our food. We use natural cooking techniques to bring the natural foods with natural flavors without the food. We use a wood-burning grill, a brick oven to cook, and we just keep the recipes as simple as possible. So when you're trying our food, you can actually taste what you're eating. You're not overwhelmed by all these other sauces and flavors.
Now, somebody once told me that there's absolutely no butter in the kitchen. Is that right?
We do not use butter in the kitchen, actually, at all. So, and sometimes our guests ask for butter, and we're like,
What about your desserts? No butter in the desserts?
There's no butter in the desserts.
Oh, wow. So they're very fresh taste. And I understand you also source your food. You know exactly where all the food comes from.
Correct.
So, and apparently this is what people want, because you have to make reservations even for lunch.
We do, and we try to bring the fresh market appeal to the table, which is, I think, is what a lot of people are looking for, you know, knowing where the food's coming from and that it's fresh and it's grown locally. So
I understand you have a pretty good wine by the glass list as well.
We do. We have an award-winning international wine list. We have over 100 bottles of wine, 60 served by the glass, yes.
60 by the glass. That's impressive.
It is.
So how does that work when you have, you open up the bottles of wine and you serve it by the glass? What happens the next day to the wine that doesn't get used?
To the wine, we offer delivered quality. So if the wine is not used, we discard the wine. We don't save it.
Then you have a happy staff.
Yes. So
the happy staff takes over. Okay, so it's really kind of a farm to table. That's kind of the food trend that I've seen. I just came back from Charleston to a media conference there, and I noticed all the chefs there concentrating on knowing who the farmer is and bringing farm-to-table kinds of food. And I think that's what you do there.
Correct. And it's very and that aspect is very important because, like, when you – it's an emotional connection that we make with our food and our product. And I think when what we bring to the table, it shows that connection that we have. And as well, we made that connection with our guests by the service, the atmosphere, the wine, and obviously the food and desserts that
right.
we offer.
So I have to tell everyone, his desserts are wonderful. And they're very they're all laughing at me because I could have eaten everyone there. But I could
eat
them.
I got on the chocolate first.
Yeah.
Then found out it didn't have any sugar in it. It was sugar-free.
But they come in little, like, shot glasses.
Well, they're shooters.
Yeah, and so you bring it to the table that way, and you're going to be serving these at the festival?
Yes, we are. We are going to be bringing our mini indulgence desserts.
Try the key lime one. It's really nice.
Oh,
I like the red velvet cake and the carrot cake.
No, the carrot cake's very popular.
I had the rocky road.
Lynn had more than one, I think.
He did? How did you get past me, Lynn?
Ah, it's the long arm.
Lynn, in addition to this charming young chef here, who else? How many chefs are going to be there?
We have about 30 restaurants that will be at Thursday night and almost 20 at the beer event on Sunday. So we have a chance to really sample a lot of local restaurants. And I think what Orlando's bringing is unique for his restaurants. It really shows that sense that they have there. And each restaurant is trying to do something that will showcase
and
what they
do. And you
can
get tickets online.
You can. Our website, which is overhauled and really great looking right now, is miamiwinefestival.org. Yeah. Did you like it?
Yes, very much.
Found your way around?
Mm-hmm. Got some nice pictures
and
on it.
So now, this is wonderful because Merrick Park is such a pretty area, a pretty mall, and to be out there. So how much does it cost and what time is it?
You have two options. On Thursday evening, you can come for the first hour at 6, and that's called the VIP tasting. And some of the wineries are bringing special wines for that period. And also, it's not nearly so crowded because we have just 150, 200 people in. And then we also have, that's a $150 ticket, and there's a $75 ticket then for the whole event.
Lynn, we had a little electronic glitch when you gave the website. Could you repeat it?
I would indeed. Thank you, Joe. It's www.miamiwinefestival.org.
And then on Sunday for the beer and bite, where's that going to be?
That will be at Mary Brickell Village, downtown Miami. So another outdoor area where you can wander around.
And Merrick's, the Brickells, doing all the whole history.
We're doing all the history of Florida, aren't we?
So for all these wine people, we're having beer?
Well, you know, there's a saying, and Fred knows this very well because we both, the Australians especially, tell us this. It takes a lot of beer to make a good wine.
I've heard that 100 times. Well, you know, the other thing is that beer overall in America is down a couple of percentage points in the last couple of years, and it's these fancy craft beers that they're showing at the festival here that are the up-and-coming trend.
Well, that's interesting. Well, we're going to take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. We're talking about the United Way Miami Wine and Food Festival with Lynn Farmer and with Chef Orlando Arroyo. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more.
Food and Dining on Topical Currents. You can read Linda Gassenheimer's Dinner and Minutes column in the Miami Herald and also online. Go to dinnerandminutes.com and click the columns icon for a link to her Herald recipes. And if you've missed part of the program or you want to hear it again, you can access the podcast from the Dinner and Minutes site at the on-air icon. This is 91.3 WLRN. Good afternoon. We're funded by listeners like you and by Field of Flowers, delivering fresh flowers sent by thoughtful people like you to grateful people throughout South Florida and the world. Orders at 800-96-FRESH or online at fieldofflowers.com. Born to be Wild 3D, narrated by Morgan Freeman, opens this Friday on the biggest screen in South Florida at AutoNation IMAX 3D Theater. This Saturday and Sunday, the whole family can participate in Babies, Blooms, and Butterflies. Release a butterfly, visit with baby farm animals in the petting zoo, learn all about reptiles from a herpetologist, and discover the amazing world of arthropods and more at the Museum of Discovery and Science. Tickets at 954-713-0930.
Hello, Joseph Cooper. Join me for Monday's Topical Currents and a visit by Lisa Dodson, author of The Moral Underground, How Ordinary Americans Subvert an Unfair Economy. Dodson is a sociology professor and has researched examples of Americans tweaking the rules to help those in need. High unemployment and rising poverty have made insecurity the norm for the working class. Fair-minded people now practice economic disobedience. Learn more Monday at 1 o'clock on Topical Currents.
We're funded by listeners like you and by Memorial Healthcare System, where Memorial Neuroscience Center's wide variety of services includes brain surgery, spine surgery, and much more. Is your doctor a Memorial doctor? Their physician referral service is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to help you find a neurosurgeon who meets your needs. The Memorial Physician Referral Service. Toll-free at 800-944-DOCS. That's 800-944-DOCS.
And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking about the United Way Miami Wine and Food Festival with Festival Director Lynn Farmer. We're also talking with one of the chefs at Seasons 52 in Coral Gables, Chef Orlando Arroyo. He's going to be taking part in the festival. We were talking about food and wine trends and these wonderful desserts that Chef Arroyo has brought for us. But now it's dinner in minutes time. And one of the things we've been talking about is farm to table. And we didn't mention the word that everybody always mentions, sustainable, local, or whatever. These are all words for our decade. And so now the dinner in minutes, it's a spring dinner. It's roasted salmon, roasted asparagus, and new potatoes. And look for wild salmon, because wild salmon is now coming, will be coming on strong pretty soon. If you can't find wild salmon in the market, what I used was frozen salmon. And on the package it says wild cut, and that's what to look for. And sometimes I think the salmon that you get frozen is better than some of what's called fresh salmon, because it's flash frozen right on the boat when it's caught. And the salmon we eat might have been sitting there for a few days in the market.
These potatoes are so good. They're so simple, just a boiled potato, small new potato, just a little bit of salt. It's perfect.
The flavor of spring.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Okay. Well, so with the new potatoes coming out in the spring, the new potatoes by law have to be about 3/4 inch. In diameter, but that's okay. Just use a red potato or yellow potato and cut them into small pieces. The way you cook potatoes, you put them in a pot of cold and fill it with cold water, put a cover on it, bring it to the boil, 10-15 minutes, they're done. A little olive oil and salt and pepper. That's all they need because they're so wonderfully sweet.
And the asparagus, do I taste a little olive oil there too?
You sure do. Mm-hmm. But it's roasted. Very simple. What I did was I take a baking tray and I line it with foil. That's basically to help you clean up. Spray it with some olive oil, put the salmon on, spray the salmon or drizzle olive oil over the salmon, under the broil about 6 inches for the heat. This one only took 5 minutes because it's a thin piece, but if it's a thicker piece, 10 minutes max. That's it. And on the tray underneath the salmon, I roast the asparagus in the same oven. Really simple, easy. And that recipe is at dinnerinminutes.com with a photograph. Also, if you'd like to have another recipe, it's in today's Miami Herald. You can look at that. It's a real hot and spicy chicken. This is a 15-minute meal. Actually, both of these are 15 minutes.
Hot and spicy from Linda?
Right, Fred.
And you didn't bring
Good
us that,
you.
Too?
And Fred?
I'm proud of you.
Thank you, Fred. Very nice to hear that after all these years. You finally got proud of me?
And you didn't bring that along, too?
Oh,
you didn't get the
doubleheader?
We can always use another lunch.
You had lunch and these wonderful desserts. And did you say thank you?
Yes, well, I'm sorry we give Linda a hard time.
Thank you, Linda.
All right. You may get lunch next week. Anyway, Fred, what are we drinking?
Well, there's big news in the wine world today, over the last few weeks. The United States has finally surpassed the French to become the biggest wine-consuming country in the world.
Oh, my God.
Last year,
what do the French have to say about that?
But not per capita.
Well,
Fred and I did our part, though, to make that happen.
We did. Yeah, we're working on the per capita now. No, we drank 330 million cases to 321 for them, although, as Joe points out, they still outdrink us on a per capita basis by 5 bottles to 1, so we can't get too proud about this. But in a way, it's because we're a lot bigger and that kind of thing. But also, wine consumption in the U.S. is going up. It's gone up at least 1% a year for 17 years, while the French have been going down. So they're drinking less wine. And a lot of the credit for what America drinks is the millennial generation. These are the people born after 1982. And as it turns out, they're
the
children.
You mean like Linda?
I'm sorry?
Like Linda.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Exactly. Okay.
No comment.
They're the children of the baby boomers, and they learned about wine at home from their baby boomer parents, while the generation in the middle, Generation X, has tended to drink beer and fancy vodkas and tequilas and that sort of thing. So it's a big new trend. And in French, it's actually the unthinkable has happened. They're getting out of the habit of having wine with lunch and dinner every day, according to a study by a university there.
When are they having it?
Well, they're not having it as much. That's the whole point. And they also have a big program against drunk driving, and that you can't buy wine in gas stations there anymore. And the legal limit is 0.5, where it's 0.8 in America. So
that is amazing.
So we should be proud, because now we're number one.
I remember when I lived in Paris, it was kind of dangerous to drive around after lunch.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I was talking to Lynn before we started here today, and we were talking about the fact that even though we've had a really rough recession going on lately, the wine bars that got so hot a couple of years ago seem to still be sticking around, right?
It is. I think it's a big part of the trend with a wine bar is the foundation for a wine bar is to have wine by the glass. You don't have to buy a whole bottle. And it's like Chef was speaking earlier at Seasons 52, where they have 60 wines by the glass. That reflects that, you know, people like Fred and me, you know, when we go to a restaurant, we like to try 3 or 4 different wines. And you can't do that if you're ordering by the bottle.
Yeah, some of the better ones even have the little machines that will give you a 1 ounce pour, so you can have 12 1 ounce glasses of wine if you want to, and really get an education.
And can we eat at these wine bars?
Usually, yeah. They usually have something.
A lot of times they'll have, you know, small plates, tapas, or very seldom will a wine bar give you a huge portion, but more, you know, the kind of what you're always advocating anyway, which is to eat smaller portions of better food. And that's what I think many of them are doing.
So you think this is a major trend? Do we have a lot of wine bars opening up in the South Florida area?
You know, I did a story a year or so ago, and they were opening up like crazy. And I was just talking to Lynn about it, and apparently a lot of them are still open. It didn't collapse.
It hasn't been a flash in the pan. And there are even some new ones that have come along. And especially in smaller neighborhoods, you know, like Buena Vista and, you know, Design District. And, you know, people can go out and walk around.
You know, one other thing I was interested in, you have a wine auction this year. I guess you always have a wine auction. It's mm-hmm. a major fundraising thing. Where do you get the wines that you auction?
Well, many of the wines, we've reduced the emphasis on highly collectible wines this year and are favoring more accessible wines, if you will. But private collectors are very generous in donating wines for this event, and the wineries donate a lot of wine. They come and they pour at the Thursday tasting, but they also will offer a magnum or a 3-liter, you know, the big bottles that are kind of fun to get. And you can pick them up at the auctions for not so much money. It's a very reasonable way to get something
really
kind of
wonderful
cool.
of them to do this, because they're doing it for charity. They're
Absolutely.
Not getting anything out of it.
No, it's unlike a lot of festivals in the area. We're not pegged to a single distributor. It's open to all wineries that are available in South Florida. And they're coming really out of devotion to the event. And then
I gather a lot of it is it's private collectors who are really generous and bringing you wonderful things out of their cellars.
Absolutely. And the winery's doing much the same.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, this was really wonderful, tasty mm-hmm. week. Lynn Farmer, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure, and I hope everybody will come and join us at the festival.
And now, where can they get the information about the festival?
Well, again, on our website, which is miamiwinefestival.org, and you can find there the after party from Glenfiddich and everything else that we're doing.
Oh, yes, there's a Scott. Oh, yes. We didn't talk about that. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, Seasons 52's chef, one of the chefs from Seasons 52, Orlando Arroyo, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us, and we're very happy to be part of the helping out our community. So.
And your desserts were fabulous, and thank you so much. And you're going to be serving these desserts at the festival?
Yes, we are.
On Thursday night, April 14th?
On Thursday night, correct, yes.
All right. That's fantastic. Well, Seasons 52 restaurants are located in Coral Gables, Palm Beach, Fort Lauderdale, and Orlando, correct?
Yes.
Yes, wonderful. Well, next week we'll be talking with John Richards. He's the director of the new Miami Culinary Institute. That's at Miami-Dade College. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And that wraps up today's edition. Our producer is Richard Ive. Technical direction from Bonnie Berman. Additional assistance from Paul Leary. And check out the Topical Currents Facebook page for book and author links and much more. You can drop us a like and leave comments or questions about our programs. At noon tomorrow, it's the Florida Roundup with Phil Latsman. At 1 o'clock, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. Monday's Topical Currents addresses the moral underground, how ordinary Americans subvert an unfair economy. And here's the calendar. On this day in 1890, 121 years ago, the birth of author and environmentalist Marjorie Stoneman Douglas in Minneapolis. She began work at the Miami Herald in 1914 under her father, Frank Stoneman, just before Fred Tasker arrived. Also on this day in 1894, 107 years ago, the first public library in South Florida opens at Lemon City, 63rd Street near Biscayne Bay. And one more while we contemplate speakeasies, bathtub gin, and homemade beer. On this day in 1933, 75 years ago, FDR signs legislation ending alcohol prohibition in the United States after Utah became the 38th state to ratify the 21st Amendment. Fred was elated then as well. And we leave with a thought from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, who began her crusade to save the Everglades at age 79. Quote, "To be a friend of the Everglades is not necessarily to spend time wandering around out there." Amen. This is Joseph Cooper. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
This is 91.3 WL.